The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Hunter ceiling fans. They provide consistent comfort all year round and also help reduce energy costs. Right now, save big on Hunter ceiling fans when you shop at Menards. View our entire selection of Hunter ceiling fans today on Menards.com. Plus, our weekly flyer with plenty more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to the In-Between Podcast. I'm your host, Mel Barrett. Let me start off with a programming note before we dive into week three of the retrial of Karen Reed. I've been a regular guest on the Crime Writers On show, The Readathon, with Rebecca Lavoy for the past 3 weeks, and will continue to join the show throughout the trial. Rebecca and I discuss and break down the trial as it happens most days, so check it out, and I'll post a link in the show notes for you. And you can always catch me here on the general feed where I'll cover the trial and other important cases as I work on a deep investigation for season 2, which should come out this summer. So if you want to stay up to date on episodes and the Karen Reed trial, hit the subscribe button. I'd also love it if you'd rate and review so we can keep this little show moving up in the algorithm. I'm trying to cover these important cases and the algorithm helps me get them out to the listeners who want and need them the most. So thanks for all you do, y'all. Okay, here we are. Week 3 of the Karen Reed trial. Phew. How's everyone doing? Still hanging in there? I hope so, because this was a big week. We finally got the actual alleged murder of Boston police officer John O'Keefe via Yuri Bukenik. I wasn't expecting that, but here we are. For those of you who didn't watch the first trial, Bukenik was former disgraced Massachusetts State Police Trooper Michael Proctor, the lead investigator on the John O'Keefe murder investigation's supervisor. Bukenik is also responsible for hunting down and intimidating little old ladies who have been leaving pink rubber duckies with the letters FKR or Free Karen Reed printed on them all over Kim. FKR supporters adopted the ducks as a symbol after Karen's attorney Alan Jackson said during the last trial, quote, "If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it must be a duck," end quote, referring to what he and the defense see as glaring inconsistencies and suspicious behavior surrounding the investigation into John O'Keefe's death, particularly where members of the Alberts and McCabes are concerned. One notable rubber duck incident involved a woman who left two miniature rubber ducks on a public bench outside of D&E Pizza, a business owned by Chris Albert, Brian Albert's brother. Sergeant Bukenik charged this woman with felony witness intimidation and misdemeanor littering. She reported feeling intimidated during the investigation, particularly as Bukenik questioned her in front of her young children. In another case, Richard Schiffer, a 65-year-old business owner from Stoughton, Massachusetts, who owns Canton Fence and knows the community well, faced similar charges for distributing rubber ducks and fake $100 bills with messages supporting Reed. Authorities charged Schiffer with felony witness intimidation, criminal harassment, and littering, alleging that his actions targeted individuals connected to the case, including members of the Albert family. However, in December 2024, Judge Brian Walsh dismissed the felony charges, ruling that Schiffer's conduct was protected under the First Amendment as political speech, which is very interesting because Yuri Bukenik himself invoked the First Amendment in witness testimony. We'll get into that abject hypocrisy in the next episode. The judge noted that Schiff's actions did not constitute witness intimidation or criminal harassment. Schiffer's case drew national attention and sparked debates over free speech and the extent of law enforcement's response to symbolic protests. Supporters viewed the charges as an overreach and an attempt to suppress dissent, while authorities maintained they were addressing legitimate concerns of witness intimidation. Sure, Jan. This third week of trial was wild, y'all. Let's get into it. The first witness to take the stand on Monday, May 5th, for the prosecution was Hannah Knowles, a forensic scientist from Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory. Knowles continued her testimony about Karen's BAC, or blood alcohol content, and Yannetti pointed out that they had no idea when Karen had her last drink. She could have continued to drink when she got back to John's house. Next up on the witness stand was Katie McLaughlin, a firefighter and paramedic with the Canton Fire Department. McLaughlin testified that when she arrived at the scene on January 29, 2022, she heard Karen repeatedly say, "I hit him." This time she heard Karen say it 4 times instead of 3, which contradicts her last year's testimony. A pretty astounding moment happened when Alan Jackson was questioning Katie about when and if the statement was actually made. Here's that moment.
Those are the statements she'd made.
And Officer Seraph is standing right there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You see any reaction from him right there?
I know he turned and told somebody to go get the sergeant. I don't know if that already played. I'm sorry?
Did you see any reaction from him?
He responded, "You what?" And she repeated it again, and then he told someone to get the sergeant.
I know what your statement is. I know that's your testimony. I'm asking about the video. Do you see him reacting right here?
You'd have to play it again. I wasn't looking at that part.
Do you see him handcuff my client?
Oh, no.
You see him calling Betty over to handcuff my client?
He turned to signal to get Goody down here is what...
So they handcuffed her?
No.
Right. They didn't handcuff her?
No.
Even though she just confessed in front of a police officer, according to you?
That's what she said.
I hit him. It's my fault. I did it. That's a confession, correct?
She said, I hit him.
And Officer Seraph just stands there, and my client walks away, correct?
You'd have to talk to Officer Seraph about that.
Oh, we have.
You should.
Mrs. McLaughlin,
objection. Okay.
So let's move on. Mr. Jackson, I'm not rushing you, but how much longer do you think you'll be?
And I learned something new this week. Did you know paramedics often write notes on their latex gloves on scene? I did not know this, but Katie is clearly writing notes on her glove when Karen is allegedly telling her, "I hit him." Three things Katie didn't do in this moment: write that Karen said, "I hit him," on her glove, and then she didn't keep the gloves. She chucked them as soon as she left the scene. And third, and perhaps most important, she never asked what Karen hit him with. A glass, a hammer, a shoe? This paramedic didn't try to gather any further information about how John could have been hit and killed. Next up was Sarah Levinson. She was in the car ride home from 34 Fairview with Jen and Matt McCabe and Julie Nagel. Though not a key witness, Sarah did drop a few bombs. She never saw John's body on the lawn, even though she would have walked right past him, but she was staring at her shoes the whole time. And Matt McCabe left the car because he forgot his coat inside, which means Matt would have walked past John's body three separate times without noticing him. Heather Maxim was up next. She's Ryan Nagel's ex-girlfriend. Ryan Nagel is Julie Nagel's brother, and he's important because he, Heather, and his buddy Rigida Antano pulled up at 34 Fairview at almost the same time as Karen and John to pick up Julie. Heather verifies they saw the SUV parked a car and a half in front of them. Ryan Nagel followed Heather Maxson. Ryan's testimony has always been important, in my opinion, firstly because he doesn't appear to have any skin in the game. He wants to tell the truth and get the fuck out of there. Here's what Ryan has always maintained happened that night. He observed Karen in the driver's seat of her Lexus with her hands positioned at 10 and 2, and the vehicle's dome light was illuminated. Nagel said he didn't see anyone else in the SUV besides Karen. He also did not witness anyone exiting the vehicle or entering the house during the 5 minutes or so that they were parked in front of 34 Fairview. Julie came out to the truck, spoke with him briefly, and then decided to stay at the party, so Ryan, Heather, and Ricky left. Next up, retired Canton Police Lieutenant Paul Gallagher, who described processing the snowy scene at 34 Fairview. I use the term process lightly here because, in fact, Gallagher used a leaf blower to blow away the top 4 inches of snow where John's body was found. He even had his buddies take a video of him doing it to show how amazing the leaf blower worked. What I saw? Bits of debris or evidence flying all over the place in an uncontrolled manner. Gallagher also borrowed some red Solo cups from a neighbor who happened to be another Canton cop to collect blood samples from the snow. Yes, you heard that right. Red Solo cups. Two things here. My observations. 34 Fairview is a few minute drive to Canton Police Department. Why in the world did they not go to the police station and grab evidence collection kits? Gallagher said it was a manpower issue, but he had no problem sending a cop from the scene to go get the leaf blower. Also, what the hell were Canton cops doing collecting evidence when the Massachusetts State Police were taking over the crime and the scene, and they were conflicted out? Okay, maybe 3 points. Here's the third. Gallagher says they picked up 6 droplets of blood in 6 Solo cups. We were shown pictures of those droplets. It might just be me, but I'm pretty sure when a liquid like blood makes droplets in the snow or on the ground, that liquid or blood would have been falling from a height. I suppose John could have stumbled and the droplets could have come from a wound, though a pathologist will testify John died instantly after being struck. Maybe he was at a height because his body was carried or dragged in place where he eventually died. That's another way blood droplets could have formed in the snow. I know that blood spatter analysis is not an exact science, but the droplets added more fuel to the John was killed and placed on the lawn theory, in my opinion. Alan Jackson really went into Gallagher and his cross questioning their evidence collection, specifically noting that during that first early morning search, Gallagher and crew didn't find taillight pieces, John's hat, or shoe. Jackson also raised concerns about cross-contamination of DNA evidence, as the red Solo cups didn't have lids and photos showed the cups hanging out in a paper bag open next to Karen Reed's Lexus in the Sallyport. I personally found it odd that the bag was open and sitting right next to the back passenger bumper of Karen's SUV, and next to the car on the ground was what looked like a paper towel of some sort. My conspiracy brain immediately goes to planting evidence. What does your brain tell you? Jackson was really using his cross of Gallagher to highlight the absolute keystone cops evidence collection of it all, especially when he questioned Gallagher about why he didn't collect the surveillance footage from the front door of the neighbor directly across the street from 34 Fairview, where Deputy Chief Tom Kelleher of the Canton Police lived. Kelleher also supplied the red Solo cups. Gallagher says he didn't even bother to ask because he knows what that camera captures, and it ain't 34 Fairview. But he didn't even try? Finally, Jackson questioned Gallagher's bias, and here's where it gets really sloppy. Forget evidence collection. Forget the camera on the front lawn across the street. Why didn't Gallagher and crew question anyone who lived at 34 Fairview? They had a guy on the lawn with no shoe, no jacket, a broken cocktail glass found in the snow next to him, and they didn't think to try to get a search warrant or even ask the owners if they could search the home where the dead guy was found. Jackson doesn't hesitate to suggest Gallagher's decisions were influenced because Brian Albert was a cop. Here's a mashup of some of Gallagher's testimony to give you an idea of what we're talking about here.
I had nothing to do with the DA's office.
Right. I know you didn't have
I don't know how they assign their cases, counsel. I don't know what you want me to say. I can't say what I don't know.
Mr. Gallagher, I'm not asking you to. I'm just asking if...
I did not know he was lead. I know he was one of the leads.
Did anybody else from the Canton Police Department, your deputy chief or the chief, interview you formally about your conduct and responsibilities before April of 2024?
I don't understand that question.
Did anybody at Canton PD, separating out Massachusetts State Police,
correct,
did you sit down at Canton PD and provide an interview with anybody at Canton PD about your conduct at the scene?
What do you mean by conduct?
Going to the scene, collecting evidence, securing evidence, transporting evidence, booking evidence, those kinds of things. Your conduct at the scene, sir.
I briefed my superiors, yes.
Okay, other than briefing, was there a formal report written?
No.
Or a formal interview conducted of you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Tell us when you wrote your report about what happened at the scene, memorializing what you did at the scene.
I didn't.
You didn't write a report?
About the scene that day at the scene?
Correct, about this investigation.
I only did the metadata report. I did not write a report at the scene. Well, dash cameras would be on the road. Mr. O'Keefe was approximately 8 to 10 feet off the road.
Well, hang on a second. You're not sure where Mr. O'Keefe was because you never saw him.
That's why I used a range, yes. I know where the blood was. I know where the glass was.
What would happen, for instance, if that blood material, I don't know, were contaminated?
Contaminated how?
You tell me. You're the professional.
So DNA is pretty hardy.
As you sit here, you've never seen an evidence log determining where that blood went and who was handling it between January 29th February 1st.
I have never seen an evidence log.
That's all I had, Robert, at least at this time.
I'll leave you with that while we take a quick break.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
On Tuesday, May 6th, we had a relatively low-key day except for when Trooper Nick Guarino got on the stand to break down Karen's incessant calls, texts, and voicemails after she returned home and couldn't get a hold of John. The biggest takeaway? Guarino confirms that Karen Reed connected to John's Wi-Fi at 12:36 a.m. and that in order to connect, she would have to be within 150 to 300 feet of the router. I'll say this again. If she connects at 12:36 a.m., it's an impossibility that she hit John when the prosecution says she did. The voicemails Guarino testified to are the voicemails I referenced in last week's episode. The prosecution says they show Karen's guilt. The defense and I say they show a frantic partner who doesn't know where her boyfriend is and if he's cheating or injured. Here are some of those voicemails for context.
At 12:36:40 a.m., the defendant calls John. It's not answered. At 12:37:08 a.m., the defendant calls John, and voicemail number one is left with voice.
Ms. Gilman, would you kindly play the voicemail for 12:37:08?
John, I fucking hate you! John, I'm here with your fucking kids. And you don't believe me, nobody knows where the fuck you are, you fucking pervert. Yeah, it's 1 in the morning. I'm with your fucking niece and nephew. You fucking pervert. You're a fucking pervert. John, I'm going home. I cannot babysit your niece. I need to go home. You are fucking using me right now. You're fucking another girl. Kim's sleeping next to me. You're a fucking loser. Fuck yourself. John, I'm gonna kill you.
What do you think? Other important bits from this day were testimony from meteorologist Robert Gilman. He was a very sweet, older gentleman who clarified that it snowed and the ground was indeed frozen. Importantly, there was only enough snow on the ground to, quote-unquote, track a cat around the time the prosecution posits the accident or murder took place. So everyone leaving the party would have seen John's body on the lawn as they were leaving. Am I right? Moving on to Wednesday, May 7th, there were only two witnesses to take the stand on this day. Jessica Hyde, a digital forensic expert from Hexordia, LLC, provided testimony regarding the timing of a controversial Google search made by Jennifer McCabe. She stated that the search for, quote, "How Long to Die in Cold," end quote, occurred at 6:24 a.m. after John O'Keefe's body was discovered, countering the defense's claim that it happened at 2:27 a.m. Hyde explained the earlier timestamp reflected when the browser tab was opened, not when the search was conducted. Hyde's testimony was grating, I'll be honest. She lectured the jury for most of the direct and was really challenged when Alessi crossed her. Importantly, a pre-trial day motion happened on this day where Alessi requested that he be allowed to cross Hyde on a case she was involved in Maryland, where the judge in the case found her to be an unreliable witness because she was positing that she could testify beyond scientific certainty about Apple proprietary information, which she can't. Let me take a little sidestep here and try to explain this very technical issue we're dealing with when determining whether Jen McCabe's search, How Long to Die in Cold, happened at 2:27 or 6:24 a.m. As I mentioned in the previous episode, when Ian Whiffen took the stand for the Commonwealth, the company he works for, Cellebrite, changed their program when defense expert witness Green brought up the anomalies in the extraction of Jen McCabe's phone, specifically calling into question the fact that the search was showing up at 2:27 a.m. Just to reiterate, Whiffen changed the program. Once the program was changed, the search at 2:27 no longer existed. In the simplest terms, none of the experts can say with 100% certainty when the search happened, because none of them have access to Apple's technology. These are scientific guesses at best. Apple is the only one who can tell us, so Tim Cook, if you're listening, help a podcaster out. Next up was Trooper Connor Keefe, who was a subordinate of Michael Proctor. At the apex of his testimony, Keefe holds up John's shoe found at 34 Fairview. Oddly, the shoe looked brand spanking new. And on cross, defense attorney David Yannetti pressed Keefe about his partnership with disgraced trooper Michael Proctor. Keefe acknowledged Proctor authored a key report and analyzed bar surveillance video. Keefe was the one who obtained the footage from C.F. McCarthy's in the waterfall, but wasn't the one who reviewed it. Proctor was. Keefe also said he was the one who attended John's autopsy, noting John had facial bruising and cuts, but no obvious broken bones. The rest of the week, Thursday and Friday, was filled with one witness and one witness only, Massachusetts State Police Sergeant Yuri Buchanek. And boy, was it a shit show. More on Buchanek's testimony after a quick break.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Based on the statement I hit him, I assumed that the Mr. O'Keefe was impacted with something. Initial hours of the investigation, we had those statements, I hit him. We had the statements that, oh my God, did I hit him? So utilizing that information with the evidence at that point that we had was a broken cocktail glass. So a theory would be, why is the cocktail glass broken? Because it came into contact with the victim.
So the answer to my question, Sergeant, is you were working off of a theory, correct? Yes or no?
We were working off a report of an injured male party, and then we developed the information, collected the evidence, and developed the investigation.
Do you know what the word theory means?
I'm sorry, English is like a third language for me, so if you can bring up the Webster's Dictionary, I can read it out.
You want me to pull up the Webster's Dictionary? You want to take a break real quick and pull up the Webster's Dictionary to define a word that you used in an answer about 40 seconds ago? We're working off of a theory, quote unquote. You said it, not me. You want me to go get a dictionary so we can figure out for the jurors what that word means?
I know it was a trusted member of our unit and part of the investigative team.
How do you know it was a trusted member of your unit and a part of the investigative team if you can't tell these jurors who it was? How do you know that?
Because I wouldn't have turned it over to a random stranger.
Okay, so let's figure out the possibilities. Who are among those to whom you would have turned this stuff over? Who are among them?
There was four troopers in the detective unit at that point assigned to homicide.
Let's name them. Who are they?
It was Trooper DeChico, Trooper Kakowski, Trooper Dunn, and Trooper Mike Proctor.
As you sit here today, do you believe or do you recall turning it over to Trooper Dunn?
Objection.
Are we gonna go through each person?
Everyone. There's only four.
I'll allow this question.
Do you remember turning it over to Trooper Dunn?
No.
Do you remember turning it over to Trooper Kakowski?
No.
Do you remember turning it over to Trooper DeChico?
No.
Do you remember turning it over to Michael Proctor?
No.
So it might have been just a random stranger. Right?
That's a ridiculous suggestion.
My observations right off the bat when Yuri takes his stand, all these cops think they're friggin' superheroes. They swore an oath to protect their communities, and that may have been their motivation when they started, but the way they're acting now paints a very different picture. To me, it seems like they think they're untouchable and that their word is gospel. So when they say they're not conflicted or that the only suspect can be Karen Reed, they should be believed without question. They're wrong. A Boston police officer is dead and his girlfriend is on trial fighting for her life. These officers owe it to the O'Keefe family to do their due diligence and get this right. How can they be trusted if they don't? Yuri was quick to answer and explain his police work on direct, but when he was crossed by Alan Jackson, he all of a sudden couldn't recall or understand a word Jackson was saying. And at one point, he made the claim that English is like his third language, so yeah, words are hard. During one heated exchange of what the word quote-unquote theory means, Yuri even told Jackson to get a dictionary so he could read the definition. At the end of these 2 days, though, what Jackson made very clear to the jury was that Yuri and his brothers in blue conducted a shitty investigation into John O'Keefe's death, and that they ignored other suspects with very good motive for killing, whether on purpose or accidental, John O'Keefe, mainly Brian Higgins. But the piece de resistance happened on Friday when Alan Jackson handed Yuri a novel-sized stack of papers and asked him to read them aloud for the jury. The stack of papers? The full exchange of text between Karen Reed and Brian Higgins that Higgins turned over to MSP. It was cringy to say the least, and I couldn't take my eyes off of it. This is the only time in the trial where there was a break for levity. Ani Bev even laughed, and Yuri, well, he mustered up his high school acting chops and kind of got into the hour-long reenactment of the text.
Out of rotation? Nah, just out of play. I am solo, no rotation. I am not a hoe. Solo? Solo, like no rotation, or woman for that matter. Not locked down, haha. Good for you, that's the best way to be. Yep, has its benefits for sure. Are you working? Remotely. Oh, tough life, live like a queen. John said, quote, Brian is being wishy-washy now, end quote. Haha, did you tell him to text me? No. You cranky now? No. Just stop being so anti-couples. Most couples don't even like each other. You tie one on last night? I was just thinking about you. Yes, 4:30 a.m. came early this morning. Eek, that's early. You out late with the Commodores? Solo? Yeah, but you're always lining up your after party. Nope, not me. Selective. I am not a hoe. Hey, no judgment. Haha. You make me laugh. I know, I'm funny. Are you okay driving? You don't want to stay here? I am fine. I have an office at the PD. You didn't answer the question. Rather you stay here? Are you serious or messing with me? 12:59 a.m. You're nuts. Foul ball. You stink. You suck. And you're double. Trouble. You're hot. Are you serious or messing with me? No, I'm serious. Feeling is mutual. Is that bad?
But the text ended in a chilling way. About 6 days before John's death, Karen ghosted Higgins. The two final texts in the exchange were Brian Higgins texting Karen at the bar that night, quote, well, end quote. Karen's response came the next day, quote, John's dead, end quote. A few other key factors in Jackson's cross of Buchanek. One, Yuri acknowledged taillight fragments from Karen's Lexus were not found until after the vehicle was impounded, and that he could not say who found them. Issues with the chain of custody again. Two, Chloe, the Albert's Malinois German Shepherd. Yuri testified the dog was rehomed after John died on the lawn and that he did not obtain records of the transfer or contact the new owners. In fact, he excluded the name of the new owner from his reports and revealed that Chloe was moved on to yet another home with a veterinarian. Three, when pressed why he didn't see Higgins as a suspect, Yuri kept saying Karen started it and she seemed like, quote, an angry girlfriend trying to set up a hookup to hurt John, end quote. Pin it on the girl, as Michael Proctor once said, and look the other way. This encompasses the entire investigation, in my humble opinion. What do you think?
That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you frame someone. That's how you dehumanize someone so viciously that you can just pin it on the girl.
That's how trial ended last week, and here's a spoiler alert. Yuri Buchanek will be back on Monday, and you don't want to miss what happens. We see new evidence for the first time, and it's surveillance video we didn't see during the last trial. Hold on to your butts, y'all. The In Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. Thanks to Amber Hunt for editorial guidance, as well as the rest of the team at Grab Bag Collab, Amanda Rossman, and Daisy Egan for their support and guidance. If you want to binge great content, head over to grabbagcollab.com and drop $5 for a membership. You won't be sorry. Follow the In Between podcast on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube at In Between Pod, and on Instagram at the In Between Pod Official. On TikTok, you can follow me at Jack of All Trades DC. Thanks for listening. Be good people and don't do murder.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.